Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
It's exactly 6 p.m. here in Bonn, Germany. Hello and a very warm welcome to DW's Africa Link program. My name is Jen Nyinge.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. As usual, we are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Feel free to drop your comments there on the stories that we are covering and share this audio. Coming up,
investigative journalists in West Africa reveal how politicians and private companies in Africa stash millions of dollars in taxpayers' money abroad.
The offshore system in many ways preys on and takes advantage of weaker nations. If you are a wealthy country, if you're a tax haven, it's a lot easier to take advantage of the international system and the offshore system.
And a Zambian popular musician finds himself on the wrong side of the law for criticizing the government.
Pilato released a controversial song called Koswe Mumpoto, meaning a rat in the pot, and that did not go down very well, especially with the sympathizers and supporters of the ruling Patriotic Front.
Further aboard, Ireland votes in a historic abortion referendum. You have also been giving us your views on what you think of this controversial debate.
Yes, indeed, Zippy, but first, let's get to know what has been happening around the world.
I'm Eunice Onjiro with DW News. US President Donald Trump said on Friday it was possible a planned summit with North Korea's leader Kim Jong-un could still take place on June 12th as originally planned. Trump warmly welcomed North Korea's conciliatory response to his abrupt withdrawal from the potentially historic Singapore summit and said, "We are talking to them now about putting it back on track." People in Ireland have been voting in a landmark referendum on whether the traditionally Catholic country should liberalise some of the strictest abortion laws in Europe. The country's leaders support a yes, an outcome that would repeal a 1983 constitutional amendment requiring authorities to treat a fetus and its mother as equals under the law. They say it's a once-in-a-generation opportunity to liberalise abortion rules. Prime Minister Leo Varadkar cast his vote at Laurel Lodge in Castleknock, a suburb of Dublin.
Not taking anything for granted, of course, but quietly confident. There's been a good turnout so far across the country, and so hopefully it'll be a yes vote tomorrow. But obviously I'd be encouraging everyone to come out and vote. High turnout, I think, would be to an advantage to the Yes campaign.
Results are not expected until Saturday afternoon at the earliest. Former Hollywood mogul Harvey Weinstein was arraigned in a New York court on Friday, charged with rape and a criminal sex act on two women. This comes nearly 8 months after his career imploded in a blaze of accusations that triggered the Me Too movement. Weinstein was released on a $1 million cash bail and must wear a monitoring device that tracks his location. His defense attorney told reporters that Weinstein would enter a not guilty plea. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. 50 people died in a boat accident on a river in the remote northwestern region of the Democratic Republic of Congo, officials said on Friday. The accident happened on the Momboyo River on Wednesday night. According to local residents, the boat had been transporting passengers and a large amount of goods from the town of Monkoto to the city of Mabandaka in Equateur province. Europe's new data and privacy rules took effect on Friday, clarifying individual rights to the personal data collected by companies around the world for targeted advertising and other purposes. Years in the making, the rules are prompting companies to rewrite their privacy policies and in some cases apply the European Union's tougher standards even in the US and other regions where privacy laws are weak. And finally, an alleged Bitcoin currency scam in South Africa has left speculators with losses of more than $80 million as an investment company admitted on Friday that its senior trader had disappeared without trace. BTC Global said its services had been suspended after its primary trader, identified as Stephen Twain, had failed to reply to emails requesting payments. South African police said they were investigating the alleged fraud, with more than 28,000 investors affected. For more news and information, visit our website, dw.com. I'm Eunice Wanjiro.
You're still listening to DW's Africa Link program. My name is Jen Nyinge.
And I'm Zipora Nyambura. First, we acknowledge our listeners on Facebook, DW Africa. Patrick Tabu, listening to us from Uganda. Eriko Jombos from Cameroon. And Enoch Deku from Ghana. You are free to leave your comments on these stories and more.
Absolutely. Now, we start off in West Africa, where investigative journalists have revealed how influential politicians, private individuals and companies who do business in Africa stash millions of dollars in taxpayers' money abroad. The International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, made up of a group of journalists working in 13 countries, looked at many countries, including Mali, Senegal, and Ivory Coast, to come up with the so-called West Africa Leaks.
The individual governments named in West Africa Leaks remained silent over the allegations. Abubakar Jallo with the details.
Some big names have come up in the leak. For example, Hamadou Touré, a candidate in Mali's upcoming presidential election and a former United Nations official, is named in the leak as the owner of an offshore company based in the Seychelles. And Noël Akosi-Bendjo, the district mayor of Abidjan, the capital of Ivory Coast, is reported to have a company in the Bahamas. Although there is currently no evidence of the purpose of these companies, the information uncovered by the journalists suggests a conflict of interest on the part of the politicians. Liberian pharmacist Clavenda Bright Parker, a childhood friend of Liberia's former president Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, has also been accused of owning a company based in the Seychelles, known as the Greater Puto Foundation Limited. She claims not to know anything about it, but Will Fitzgibbon, the ICIG coordinator of West Africa Leaks, explains why this particular case was of importance.
I think what's striking and of crucial public importance in Liberia in that case is getting some answers as to why a prominent person with very little known experience in the mining industry was a shareholder and a director of a company in a tax haven, the Seychelles. Ms. Bright Parker, I should say, denied any knowledge of the offshore company, and former President Johnson Sirleaf said she'd never had discussions with her friend.
Governments are also implicated in the shady dealings, the many findings of West Africa Leaks show. In fact, years ago, Senegal signed a treaty with Mauritius which allowed international companies to conduct their operations in Senegal via Mauritius. They were therefore able to legally avoid paying taxes. This took place under Abdoulaye Wade, the country's president from 2000 to 2012. Current president Macky Sall has said he regrets the contract. Nevertheless, Senegal has not yet dissolved it. This is also due to international power structures, according to Fitzgibbon, the ICIG coordinator of West Africa Leaks.
The offshore system in many ways preys on and takes advantage of weaker nations. If you are a wealthy country, if you are a tax haven, it's a lot easier to take advantage of the international system and the offshore system. We spoke to the government of Senegal and they told us that it regrets signing the tax treaty with Mauritius.
The latest research is based on data which was published via the ICIJ in recent years. The organization worked with a number of West African journalists for the project to be successful.
Abubakar Jallo with that report.
Moving on, Irish voters are casting their ballots today in an abortion referendum that could represent a change in the path of a country that was once one of Europe's more socially conservative. The country is voting on whether to repeal the country's Eighth Amendment, which outlaws abortion by giving equal rights to the unborn.
Now, the voters will be asked if they wish to scrape a prohibition that was added in the constitution by referendum 35 years ago and partly lifted in 2013 only for cases where the woman's life is in danger. The result is expected to be close after a vigorous campaign, but the latest poll suggests voters are ready to overturn the ban. DW's Sean Defoe with more.
People will be asked to repeal the Eighth Amendment and to allow the Parliament to legislate for abortion, a yes-no question on whether this part of the Constitution should stay or go. Leo Varadkar, the Taoiseach, which is Irish for leader, is one of the key figures advocating for a yes vote.
I have absolutely no doubt that they will make the right decision based on compassion, based on empathy, but not in a way that's disrespectful to human life. I think it may say, if it is approved, and I believe it will be approved, that as a country we've come of age because we're no longer willing to export our problems and import our solutions.
The public won't have any say on what new abortion laws would come in if the Eighth Amendment is repealed, but it's being held with the understanding that the government will try to bring in a liberal regime. The proposals are to allow abortion without restriction for up to 12 weeks into pregnancy. A woman will have to go to her doctor looking for an abortion, then wait 72 hours to think it over before being given an abortion pill. After 12 weeks, there would be restrictions, and abortions could only be allowed where there's a fatal fetal abnormality affecting the child or where there's a risk to the life or health of the mother. They're proposals that have drawn a mixed reaction from politicians, commentators and the public who've taken to the streets in their thousands on both sides.
We have women going to Britain in their thousands. We know that in every county in Ireland, every day, 3 to 10 women take a boat or a plane. This is something that we need to address.
What we are voting on in May is a referendum that will empower the government to tell doctors that they must end lives. This is deeply offensive and profoundly wrong.
Driving down the motorway outside Dublin, I pass a car with repeal painted on a homemade cardboard sign stuck in the rear windscreen. Driving into Waterford City 2 hours down the road, every second sign on lampposts warn that 1 in 5 babies in the UK are aborted. Vote no, they say. The country is unrecognisable from 1983. Homosexuality was illegal then, and now Ireland's first openly gay Prime Minister is leading the campaign to reform abortion laws. And on May 25th, a new generation will have their say on whether or not Ireland should allow abortion.
DW's Sean Defoe.
And on our Facebook page, we asked the question, what do you think will be the results of such a referendum across African countries?
And Charles Guillem says abortion should be allowed even only if the pregnancy poses a threat to the mother's life.
Keep those comments coming on our Facebook page at DW Africa.
The long-awaited trial of popular Zambian musician Chama Fumba, popularly known as Pilato, did not take place today as planned. Pilato was released on bail earlier this week by a Lusaka court after being arrested when he returned home from South Africa, where he had fled, fearing for his life.
Now he had received threats from supporters of the ruling Patriotic Front over his hit song Koswe Mompoto, which in the local Mbemba dialect translates to rat in the pot. The song was widely seen as accusing President Edgar Lungu and his ministers of being corrupt. Earlier I spoke to DW's Kathy Short, who is in Lusaka, and she started by explaining why the trial did not start as expected.
The trial did not take place today because it is a public holiday here in Lusaka. It is Africa Freedom Day, so probably the authorities overlooked that. So we expect the trial to start in the next few days.
And Kathy, Pilato has been accused together with other 5 activists. What are the charges against them?
The charges are that they staged an illegal protest near the parliament buildings following the purchase of 42 fire tenders by the government of the Republic of Zambia at $42 million, and they did not have a permit to stage that protest. Just after the protest, Pilato released a controversial song called Koswe Mompoto, meaning a rat in the pot, and that did not go down very well, especially with the sympathizers and supporters of the ruling Patriotic Front, who saw it as a direct criticism of President Edgar Lungu and his government.
And why was this song considered controversial?
This song is considered controversial because it deals with corruption and talks about government being corrupt and being likened to a rat in the pot. And in the song, he says that a rat actually comes to eat what the master gives it, and it also eats what is the master's. And a lot of people see it as, talking about the government of the day. So yes, it has brought about a lot of problems. So basically, he's likening the government to the rat in the pot.
DW's Kathy Sikombe.
Thank you. Welcome back to the program. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And my name is Jen Nyinge. Once again, welcoming our Facebook listeners. Zippy, who is listening to us?
Yeah, you're right, Jen. You have lots of listeners. Onyeka Ekonuko from Nigeria, Emeka Obi, and Chris Anfusu from Cameroon. Please keep writing to us. We are always happy to hear your feedback.
Yes, indeed.
Still to come, the woman who changed the course of Taarabu music in East Africa while questioning the patriarchal system in Zanzibar.
The songs which she composed directly touched the people's heart. For example, she talked about the women, how they were abused by men, and then she talked about the government, especially the legal system.
Not to forget our sports segment, and Zippy, all roads lead to Kiev for the European Champions League final. We'll be hearing from Davis van Opdorp, who is from our sports desk.
But before all that, did you know today is a very crucial day for Africa? It's Africa Day, a day set aside to commemorate the formation of Africa Union, formerly known as the Organization of Africa Unity. The organization was founded by 32 countries, but since then, a further 21 states have joined gradually over the years, with South Africa becoming the 53rd member on the 23rd of May 1994.
Now, the African Union aim is clear: to bring about change and freedom to many African countries and restore dignity of African people. But the question is whether it has been able to achieve this over the years. Our correspondent James Shimanyula talked to various people on what they think about the organization.
It is exactly 17 years since the African Union was formed in Addis Ababa, beginning the difficult task of uniting a continent that had long suffered under colonial rule. Years later, Africa is still facing enormous challenges which have made many question its role. So, is there a reason to celebrate? A question I posed to Kenneth Alukwe, a Kenyan academic specializing in African affairs.
To be honest, no. They need to wake up and do their work. They wake up and do right to people who have put them to those positions where they are. There is no rule of law in most countries in Africa, and yet there is nothing that has been done.
Alukwe says it is high time the African Union reviewed its structure to effectively tackle problems facing the continent.
Of course, it's coming to 17 years this Saturday. A lot of things, especially in terms of human rights violations in Africa, we have not seen AU coming out very strongly to condemn this. In terms of leadership in Africa, there's not been strong voice from AU condemning the heinous human rights violation. Different countries like Sudan, countries like Somalia, even Burundi, the recent referendum, yet they keep quiet. So we wonder, do they have teeth to act?
But there are still those who think the AU has achieved a milestone since its formation. Human rights defender and activist Naomi Barasa says Africa still needs African Union because it has played a pivotal role in the continent.
If I look at the African Union from the Africa Commission on Human and People's Rights, I would say it has been very useful, very instrumental in driving the human rights agenda in this continent. Consider the issue of the indigenous people. The African Court of Justice, which is an organ of the African Union, had a very grand ruling a year ago on Kenya respecting the rights of the indigenous people. And that ruling, I call it grand because it's being referenced by many countries in the world. So I think the African Union is a useful organ. They can do better than they're doing.
On the streets, people have mixed views about the African Union.
I, as a person from Uganda, think the African Union has helped. It has helped many African countries, although not as much as expected. There is peace because of the African Union.
I think if we have regional organizations, then I think we don't need African Union anymore.
Those are the views of some Africans on African Union as we celebrate Africa Day today. And that report was compiled by James Shimanyula in Nairobi, Kenya.
And of course, you've been giving us your feedback about what you think about Africa Union. And Chris Nogu says, where there is peaceful, prosperous and integrated Africa. Africa Union, as much as I know, is a toothless bulldog and biased organization.
And we have this one from Marco Kello. He says, from today, change it from African Union to dictatorship union. I think that one sounds better. I don't think so.
Yeah, the trust is actually gone from all the comments we see here. Oscar Mpwape says, a total failure. They could not even stand with Gaddafi during the Libya's war, who had a true vision of a united Africa.
And Oscar Mwampe says we lack patriotism in Africa, especially amongst our leaders.
So surely divergent views. We are always happy. Keep on giving us your feedback.
DW, African Roots.
Now for the lovers of Arab music, the name Sinti Binti Said may just ring a bell. She was a famous singer and composer from Zanzibar and was the first East African to make commercial recordings. The role of Sinti Binti Said, the so-called mother of Arab in East African music, can hardly be overestimated.
But her story does not end there. She not only opened up performative space for women, but also challenged the patriarchal norms of Zanzibar society. Here is her story.
Wewe Paka is only one out of many songs recorded by Sinti Binti Saad at the end of the 1920s. In order to capture the unique voice of this singer from Zanzibar, the British Gramophone Company brought her and her musicians all the way to Bombay in India, at a time when there were still no recording studios in her home country. The result? More than 250 songs produced and 72,000 records sold between 1928 and 1931. Her recording career was a token of a great performing artist whose real power couldn't be banned on records.
She had a very beautiful voice, very powerful. She could easily capture the audience.
Explains Mariam Hamdan, a musician journalist from Zanzibar who, besides performing Sinti Binti Saad's song herself, has done some research on her life. She stresses that before reaching the heights of stardom, Sinti Saad knew humble beginnings. Born 1880 into a poor family in the Zanzibari village of Fumba, she enjoyed no formal education, making a living of selling pottery on the street while singing to attract her customers' attention. Exchanging her village for Zanzibar town in 1911, Sinti started working with various musical groups, learning Arabic and singing at Islamic recitals. But it was with Taarab music that she became really famous. This recent musical genre, sung poetry accompanied by an instrumental ensemble, was credited to Sultan Sayyid Bagash bin Said. Whereas it was originally only performed by men and sung in Arabic, Sinti Saad completely changed the rules. Mariam Hamdan.
She used Kiswahili prominently, and the songs which she composed directly touched the people's heart because they talked about their daily problems, their needs. For example, she talked about the women, how they were abused by men, and then he talked about the government, especially the legal system.
Social criticism was an important aspect of Sinti Binti Saad's music. Despite her success, she never forgot where she came from. She performed for Zanzibar's Sultan and for the elite, but also regularly held free shows at her house that became a place for exchange and debates.
She was like a newsletter because she was singing what the people wanted to hear, what the people wanted to tell the system at that time.
Sinti Binti Saad passed away in 1950. Not many of her original recordings remain today, but her music is still played a lot in Zanzibar, Tanzania, and beyond. Her songs are part of the standard repertoire of many Taarab bands. Sinti Binti Saad cleared the way for many female Taarab singers. often called the voice of East Africa and the mother of Taarab, she contributed to leading Zanzibar's culture to world acclaim, and she helped stretch the political boundaries of music.
Surely a golden voice there of Siti Binti Saad, dubbed the mother of Taarab. That was today's episode of African Roots, a project realized in cooperation with the Gerda Henkel Foundation. Report was compiled by Aude Gensbittel.
Absolutely. And Zippy, I love Taarab because it's somehow soothing and it's all about love.
Yeah, it sounds very oriental. Jane, I don't think it's all about love. She sang about other issues, but it's really very inspiring.
Let's now head to sports, and all eyes and roads this weekend lead to Kiev Olympic Stadium for the Champions League final. Liverpool are chasing their first title in 11 years, while Real Madrid are seeking to defend that title.
So, will it be Real Madrid or Liverpool? Earlier, I talked to Davies Fan Up Top from our sports desk, who starts by telling us his bet on tomorrow's final.
I think the safe bet is definitely to go with Real Madrid. I mean, they, of course, they've won three of the last four Champions Leagues. They're going for three in a row. They have the best talent in the world. They can buy the best talent in the world. And it's Liverpool is definitely the underdog in this tie.
What would a win mean for Jurgen Klopp?
Jurgen Klopp was in the final in 2013, so he's been to the final before, but he's never won it. That's one of the competitions that he's never won. And considering he's still relatively new to Liverpool, he's been there a couple of seasons, but in the broad spectrum, he's still new to England and Liverpool. It would be a huge accomplishment for him, especially since he's never won it before.
You can bet many soccer fans in Africa will be glued on their TV sets to watch that final. Now, Liverpool striker from Senegal, Sadio Mane, just sent 300 Liverpool shirts to locals in his home village, Babali. Why is this final so important to him?
Well, it was interesting because he told The Guardian in an interview that he actually watched the last time that Liverpool were in the final, which was in 2005, when he was 13 years old. And that final, of course, Liverpool were down 3-0 and then came back to win 3-3. So now his home village, which has about 2,000 people, they have a new rooting interest this time since Liverpool is in the final. And since he figures that nobody's going to be working, he also figured that they should be wearing Liverpool shirts if they're going to watch the game.
And now, of course, we know the World Cup is just 1 month away. Everyone thinks of the defending champions, Germany. Tell us about, what do you think about their preparation so far?
Well, the biggest story that's come out so far from their training camp in South Tyrol and in Italy is that Manuel Neuer, their captain and their starting goalkeeper, is looking healthy. Joachim Löw said yesterday that if he's only going to go if he's 100% fit, and he looks it so far, and that would be a major boost for Germany to have their captain and arguably one of their best players and most iconic players for the World Cup in Russia.
And of course, there are the African teams which will also be gearing up their preparations this weekend. Do you think this time they may actually at least go farther in the tournament?
Well, I see there's some colleagues in the sports department who think that Egypt could even make a decent run at it. Of course, Egypt with another person playing tomorrow in the Champions League final, Mohamed Salah, he's been spectacular for them. And sometimes you only need that one terrific player to get you one or two goals that you need to get out of a group or to get on to the next round. But unfortunately, I think there's the talent in South America and in Europe is just too great for any African team to overcome.
Davies Van Opdijk from DW Sports Desk.
And Zippy, we already have some predictions here. And Chinyere Izaife says Real Madrid 3, Liverpool 2.
Yeah, it seems so many people are betting on Real Madrid. Atabong Lenas says Real Madrid will win 3-0 against Liverpool.
Roland Nati is of no team. He says it's going to be a match to watch.
And Mira Duke says Liverpool is picking it easy with the most goals, 5-2 in favour of Liverpool.
And Arnold Kerr says Salah will score 2, Liverpool 3-1 Real Madrid, and Salah will win the Ballon.
So surely it's not so far. We are going to get the final tomorrow.
Zippy, where is your prediction?
I bet Real Madrid will win.
Can we bet 10 euros?
No, I will not bet on that. That's all for today. Thank you for keeping us company. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
And my name is Jen Nyinge. Thank you so much for your time.